So yes, I'm Claudia from University of Milan, and so first of all let me thank really the organizers for giving me this chance to participate in this program and present part of my work. So I will present myself through my research interest. So at the moment I'm working on noisy continuous time quantum waves, quantum probing and local estimation theory, the coherence in quantum in qubit systems, and the experimental realization of an optical simulator for qubit dynamics. But for the purpose of this talk, I will just focus on these two topics, and the common ground would be classical noise. So the idea here is that okay, I work on open quantum system, but instead of studying quantum descriptions of quantum system plus quantum bath, we're focusing on this idea of a quantum system interacting with classical noise, that you can imagine it as a classically randomly fluctuating field. So let's start with the first topic, which is quantum waves. Basically, quantum waves describe the motion of a quantum particle over a network, and a network is mathematically described as a graph, as a collection of vertices connected by edges. And physically, you can imagine the nodes as the possible position that your particle can occupy, and the edges are the couplings between these positions. So I will call them links or couplings or tunneling energies. And the fact that you have a quantum part, so first, the continuous time means that in this case I consider time as a real parameter, so I'm not dealing with discrete time quantum waves. And so the fact that they are quantums means that you have a superposition of state, interference effects, and these also the fact that you're not calculating transition probability but transition amplitude means that the dynamics of your quantum walker is different from the one of the classical counterpart. And a little bit of context, why are we interested in quantum walks is because they are very powerful tools. They use to describe a variety of systems. They are used in different contexts, ranging from universal quantum computation or to model transport property in complex structures, or for example the transport of energy in quantum biology. If you think about these FMO complexes for the transfer of energies, but also to a more fundamental level, for example to study the quantum to classical transitions in these quantum systems. And why we're interested in noisy quantum waves is because when you go to the lab and try to implement these continuous time quantum waves, you may have defects, imperfection in the fabrication of your lattice, or there may be some noise, some classical fluctuation, even thermal fluctuations, even if here I'm not dealing with them. And so these imperfections and fluctuations changes the properties of your lattice, of your network, and in turn this changes the dynamics of your quantum systems, or the quantum properties may be affected by this imperfection. And so we want to model, to describe a model that includes these noise or these defects. So the simplest network or graph you can think about is a line. So one dimensional lattice or a chain. You can also think about this image of spin chains where you only have one excitation. So if you restrict yourself to the single excitation subspace, this system can be met in a single particle quantum walk over a 1D lattice. And so the Hamiltonian describing the system is this one, where basically you have two sets of terms, the diagonal terms, which describes the outside energies, and the off-diagonal terms, which describes the tunneling energies, so the jumps of the particle. And this model is solvable, is very well known, formally is identical to the tie-binding model in solid-state physics, so the solution is known. And first thing I want to point out is that is the difference between the evolution of a classical and a quantum particle over this lattice. And if you look at the probability distribution of the particle over the lattice long times. The classical one is as a Gaussian probability distribution centered on the initial state, initial site, while the quantum particle has a very non-Gaussian distribution, the blue one here, with these two tails that are moving way farther away from the initial position. And then, so this was the unperturbed model, now we have noise. And to add noise, in particular this idea of classical fluctuation, we took the idea from, again, graph theory, where we have this percolation phenomena. Percolation, dynamical percolation in graph theory means that the links of the graph are created and destroyed randomly in time. And so we decided to mimic these fluctuations affecting the couplings. So if now the couplings, each coupling is described as a stochastic process. So it's random, yes, a stochastic process that switches between two values. So the process, the stochastic process that precisely describes this this action of creating and destroying things is random telegraph noise, because random telegraph noise describes a variable that switches between two values. And if these two values are 0 and 1, and you apply this to the couplings, you are creating and destroying links randomly according to a certain switching rate or percolation rate that gives you basically the velocity of these fluctuations. And the important quantity of the random telegraph noise is the autocorrelation function. So if that is exponentially decaying in time, and if this delta k of j means that every there is no spatial correlation, that means every single link evolves independently of the other. So the every coupling is independent of the others. And there another characteristic properties of this let's say noise is that we can distinguish two regimes. One is called slow noise, which means that the ratio between the switching rate and the perturbed coupling is very small, so that these fluctuations are
so slow noise means that these fluctuations are very slow in compared to the energies of your systems, and fast noise means that these fluctuations are very fast. So how do we calculate the dynamics of our quantum particle over the lattice? We have to perform an ensemble average. So basically, what we have to do is to build many realizations of the stochastic process. So each link evolves independently, and for each link, we have to create a series, as many as possible realizations. And then for each realization, we can calculate the evolution operator of the system. Here, T is the time ordering. And you calculate the average density matrix as an ensemble average over potentially all possible infinite realizations of your of the noise. And what you have here, and this is an old result, is that so the black line is the unperturbed case, the noiseless case. If you have slow noise, the effect of slow noise, if you initially start in a single site, is that it localizes your particle around over few sites around the initial positions. While if you have fast noise, what you get is this Gaussian-like probability distribution over the lattice. So basically, it's like if you have a transition from quantum to classical behavior in the probability distribution. And so what we see here, it seems that noise, considered in this case, is always detrimental. So in one case, it localizes your particle. So unless you don't want your particle to be localized, this is something that prevents the exploration, the spreading over the lattice. And in the other case, you have a classical-like behavior. So it's something that you usually don't want. And so what we asked ourselves next was, can we improve this? So what happens if we add spatial correlations in the noise? Can this help to preserve the quantum feature of our system? And in order to implement this spatially correlated noise, we created the spatial domains. And inside each domains, links belonging to the same domain fluctuate in a synchronous way. So before, every link was independent. Every devolution of every link was independent. Now we created, it's better to see here, these domains. And inside each domains, the fluctuations are synchronous for the links belonging to that domain. So mathematically, this means that if you now look at the autocorrelation function and consider site links j and k, the autocorrelation function is exponential in decay if link j and k belong to the same domain. Okay, so they move in a synchronized way. And another thing that we decided to add is to create this domain in a random way, so to create them randomly. And to do so, we just fix the probability that, oh, this is a 2. Two adjacent links are correlated with a certain probability p, and given this p, you can calculate the average domain length just as a function of the total number of links and this probability p. And so what our results is that if you consider a particle that is initially localized, we can analyze the spread of the wave function looking at the inverse participation ratio, which is a quantity that stays as values between 1 over n and 1. 1 over n is for complete delocalization of the wave function. 1 is for the full localization. And so if we fix a certain value of the switching rate, so it is the velocity of the fluctuations, you see that by increasing the average length of these spatial domains, the IPR decreases. So it means you break localizations. By adding some spatial correlations in the noise, you can break localizations. Because in these regimes, usually for these low values of gamma, what you have, as I showed you before, the particle tends to stay localized. But I can show you this. This is shown in a better if we, instead of a localized initial state, we consider a Gaussian wave packet. So your particle is initially represented by a superposition of site with a Gaussian with Gaussian weight and an initial kick of velocity, this P0. And so here, there are many plots, but here we go from slow to fast noise regimes, and we analyze the average velocity momentum of your particle and the IPR. And so let's look at the slow regime. So what we see is that as we increase the average length of this domain, so as the spatial correlations become stronger, you see that the average momentum is preserved. It is better preserved. Okay, if you don't have spatial correlation, the initial velocity decays to zero. While if you increase them, the momentum tends to be preserved. And the IPR, on the contrary, decreases. So what does it mean? That in these regimes where you usually have localization, actually if you start from initial wave packet, what you have again, as I showed you before, is that if you add some spatial correlation, you break this localization because the IPR decreases. While on the other extreme case of very fast noise, what you have is that, again, the average momentum tends to be preserved as you add this spatial correlation. But now the IPR increases with the average length. What does it mean? It means that if you have an initial wave packet with a certain width, and if you add the spatial correlation, then this wave packet can travel. It keeps its momentum, and it keeps its shape, its width. It doesn't spread because the IPR tends to be conserved. So basically, you can move this, this wave packet move around the lattice, almost keeping its initial width. So you don't. Basically, what you have is transport. You can transport your wave packet with almost its original shape. And so I think this is very nice, and this is proof that if you have the chance, or if you can add some spatial correlations to your system in the noise, so if you can engineer the environment such that to have some spatial correlations, you can either break localization in the zero noise regime or allow a wave packet with a certain shape to travel across the lattice, keeping its shape. So I think this is very nice for me, and it was one of the results I wanted to show you. So I decided to present the single particle case because I wanted to focus on the description of the noise and on how you can add the spatial correlations. But I want to spend 1 minute to say that we also analyzed the two particle case, so two indistinguishable interacting particles on a one-dimensional chain with an interaction that decays, say, is position dependent. And I don't want to enter in the details, but I just wanted to say that there exist regimes of strong interaction. So U is the interaction, J is the average coupling, let's say, unperturbed coupling between the sides, where in the fast noise regime, the spreading of the wave function is faster than the noiseless case. So in this case, we had uncorrelated noise. And just by adding some fast noise, it seems that the wave function can spread, so can explore faster the lattice than the classical case. And I just wanted to tell you this because I think this results needs further investigation. From my point of view, it's interesting. Very interesting, but it's just the starting point of this investigation. And this is my first question to you. What I would like to do and to discuss also in the next days and weeks is I would like to put this kind of noise on many particle systems, so to consider many particle quantum walks. But at the moment, I don't have the expertise. I don't know how to efficiently simulate the dynamics of many, for the moment, is three particles, four particles, but in the presence of noise. So I think here there are many people who work with like Bose-Abbard model or Fermi models. And maybe we can talk about this and to see if you're interested in putting this kind of this kind of noise with spatial correlation or even without. And so if you want to have a chat after on the next days, please tell me something. And so, okay, this was for the first part, so how to, this idea of engineering the environment in putting some spatial correlations to preserve better some quantum properties. There is still a lot of work to do. And so here, I just consider the spread of the wave function, but the next step, of course, is to consider real transport, starting from a initial site and move to a target site and see if it's possible to have real transport, for example. And then I want to move to the next topic, which is the experimental implementation of an optical simulator of a qubit. This was auto-corrected by the computer. It's one qubit. And so please keep in mind that I'm a theoretician, so I'm not an experimentalist. I will try to tell you about this experiment we did in our group, but please keep this in mind. So so far, I've told you about a long chain, 1D chain. What if we restrict to two nodes chain? So you have an excitation jumping between the two sides. What you are describing is a qubit. And so what we can describe is a qubit whose splitting energy is randomly fluctuating in time. So this is the Hamiltonian describing the qubit, where this x of t is again our stochastic process. And if you start from a certain initial state, okay, you know this Hamiltonian leads to a dephasing dynamic. So you have your density matrix, which describes dephasing, and these coherence factors are described as an average over this phi of t is the noise phase, again, is the integral of your stochastic process over time, so itself is a stochastic process. And if you look at the behavior of the coherences over time, what we see is that depending on the rate of these of your fluctuations, you can have revivals and of the coherence function. And in particular, the smaller your value of gamma, the higher are these revivals. So the larger these revivals. And then there is a threshold. If gamma is larger than 2, this gamma is, again, rescaled with the coupling term, is larger than 2. Then you have a monotonic decay of the coherences. And in this particular case of a qubit, actually, you have an analytical solutions for the expression of the coherence. And so what we're interested in is to be able to simulate these dynamics of a qubit fluctuating and to recover the behavior of the coherences for different values of gamma. So how do we do this? Using an optical setup, so using just optical elements. And the idea here is to use the polarization degrees of freedom of one single photon to encode the qubits and the spectral components to describe the environment, in particular to describe the different realizations of the noise. So the difficult part begins. So how did they do this? The group of Simone Cialdi in our lab. So the photon, two photons are created by parametric down conversion. One is just detected and it's used for the coincidence count. The other one, so basically we trace out the idler photon. We just keep this, the signal idler, the signal photon. And so our global system is described in this way, the polarization degrees of freedom encodes the qubit, and then you have the frequency components that describe the different realizations, that describes our environment. So what we do now, we send this photon to a grating and to a lens, and the idea is the effect of the grating and the lens is to spatially divide this spectral component. Okay, so basically you open the map, you have a spatial dispersion of the spectral component such that each component can be described by a Gaussian profile centered in a different coordinate x. So you can associate each spectral component with a certain spatial coordinate or angle or position. And then you go through the spatial light modulator. Okay, spatial light modulator is basically an array of pixels such that each pixel can imprint a random phase generated by a computer on the horizontal component of your photon. So when the spectral components are spatially dispersed, so they hit the mask, let's say, each component hit the mask at a different position. So they hit different pixels of the mask. And so at each we can apply a random phase, a different random phase to each different component. And in this way, basically, we are simulating the different realizations of the noise, because one of them is associated to a different random phase. And then, okay, so basically, for each spectral component, we have the every spectral component is described by this state, where we apply the random phase just to the horizontal component of the polarization. Then we send the photon to the tomographic apparatus and we recollect it through a lens that focuses the components on a grating, and we send them to a multimode fiber. And when we recollect the components, we put them all together and we send them to the multimode fiber. This is where we perform the ensemble average, because we are putting all the components together, and then we send them to the detector, and the computer can analyze the result. Okay, sorry about this. And so described in a more mathematical way. As I told you, there is this correspondence between the spatial component and the positions, because they are spatially dispersed. And then if I introduce a basis for the pixel, I can describe each component, spectral or spatial components, in the basis of the pixels, where this eta r of x is the probability that the component x passes through the r pixels. And with this simulator, the evolution operator we are implementing is this. So whenever you have h component of the polarization, you are imposing a phase on pixel r. And if you calculate the global density matrix, trace out the environment, so trace out the pixels, degrees of freedom, what you have is the density matrix of your system. And you see this is a dephasing density matrix. And this ARR coefficient, actually, it's the integral of this probability distribution of hitting pixel R, weighted with the basically, this is the spectrum of the PDC. And we can put ourselves in a range where this spectrum is almost constant. So this integral gives is almost equal to 1 over n. And so the coherences here are described exactly by an average of this phase factor, considering n realization of the noise, where n is the number of pixels of our spatial light modulator. And so this is this basically is what our simulator does. And due to imperfection that and sources of the coherences that are present in this apparatus, actually the state you reconstruct, you have the output is not your OS, but is a mixture of this state with the fully mixed state. So this parameter P, you want this parameter P to be as near as possible to 1, so that you have your wanted state. And so the quantity you want to calculate is the off-diagonal terms of your density matrix. And there are two ways to do this. You can do full-state tomography of your system. But actually, since we can prove that this coherence factor is a real quantity, we can actually just perform one projective measurement over the plus state. And we can, because this gives us the real part of this quantity, which is actually the quantity itself. And so these are the results. So this is the comparison of blue line is the theory. And the green dots, they are just here. The green dots are this, the coherences reconstructed with full tomography. And the red dots are coherences reconstructed with a projective measurement. And so you see that the experimental data matches quite well the behavior expected from the theory. So for two different values of gamma, as we increase gamma, you see that the revivals are smaller. And I didn't put it here, I don't know why, but we also have the case for large gamma, so gamma equal to 5, and we see a monotonic behavior, a monotonic decay of the coherences. And and of course, again, the experimental data matches the theory. So this was just, we started with the single qubit case as a proof of principle of the functioning of our simulator. Of course, what we want to do is to be able to simulate more than one qubit. And next step, this is what we've been doing in the last year. So it's almost ready. We did the two-qubit simulator. So this time we used both the photons produced by the parametric down conversion. And the idea here is to study the transition from local noises to a global noise. And thanks to this spatial light modulator, we are able to do this. And I think in a month and a half, we will have a paper on the, I hope so, we will have a paper on the archive. So if you're interested in this, and maybe I can give you a little bit more of details, if I'm able, or you can read it in a month and a half on the archive. So with this, I conclude. I conclude by saying that what I wanted to do is to tell you about this, how we introduce classical noises in different kind of quantum system, being them a qubit or a quantum hoax. Next step, of course, would be, so we just analyze the line, 1D chain. We're interested in more complex topologies. So also in this case, if you have in mind some topologies that can be of interest for you, please tell me. And the other case is I'm interested in many particle quantum hoax with these random fluctuations. So again, I'm here if you have suggestions or if you want to discuss about this. And then if I can, I have an unrelated question. If there is anybody here as expert in spatial search algorithm by continuous time quantum hoax, please tell me something because I have questions. And with this, I think I finished my time and I thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Claudia, for that fascinating talk. We have time for discussions.
For the quantum hoax, you showed these distributions.
Yeah.
They are calculated for a fixed time, or are they somehow some... I mean, the question is, are there some asymptotically stable, soliton-like things that move, or do they...
So, like, these distributions, okay, they are at a fixed time, and here we are, considering...
what kind of boundary condition?
Yeah, I mean, the dynamics is stopped before it it meets the boundary condition. So here, the lattice was actually a ring, but we stopped before it reaches the boundary. So because we were not interesting, I mean, we were interesting in the dynamics before the effect of the boundaries.
Yeah, but then if it stays localized?
But this stays localized. The point, when you have localization, is like Anderson-like localizations. It stays localized even if you evolve it into very, very long time. I mean, it just stays there.
And in the case of the moving Gaussian, that would just move around the ring?
I mean, this will just spread, keep spreading.
No, later you showed this Gaussian that had a velocity.
Ah, this is something I can do because I stopped it before, but I guess, okay, this is something I need to look at because I stopped it before the boundaries. But I guess so, in principle, if there aren't any, I mean, if it keeps it, all these components there, in principle, this should happen. But I can check up.
I sort of have a similar line of questioning. So, you know, for example, we know that when we have localization phenomena and we have nonlinearity in a problem, then that nonlinearity will cause, at you know, extremely long times, delocalization, typically way off scale of experiments and simulation times, you know, will be like 10 to the 4, 10 to the 5 time steps, very long time. So this is work by Sergei Flach. So it seems like for both the localization case and the perhaps solitonic or solitary wave case, that going to very long times would tell you whether or not, you know, you get this, this like delocalization. There's some, I think some, there's an inverse power law with you know, less than one and about the time at which that occurs. And then I think there's some fractal underneath that.
Okay.
So that's in work of Sergei Flach, like I said. And, you know, if you're getting a soliton, you must be having some effective nonlinearity in the problem. So if the thing is staying together, I sort of wonder for your Anderson localization case, is it a kind of Zeno effect, like the noise is somehow constantly projecting back into...
I don't know. I think it's really it's really similar to the... I mean, in the real Anderson localizations, this is you have it because of this interference effect.
Right.
You know?
So
I think this
here.
Is something similar. Because this is not the real static case, so this is because we still have very slow fluctuations. But if we put the static noise, so the link are just generated random, but they don't fluctuate. I think this is, there is a complete correspondence with the real Anderson localization. Anderson localization, you have them on the on-site energies. But I think there's a mapping between the two, so I think it's really like Anderson localization.
But I think it can be just Zeno, right? Because otherwise...
Because it blocks...
You have most localization for the slow noise, and then the Zeno...
You know, before we do the fast case. Yeah, you're right, so this can't be it, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
this noise related say, but I always think about it this as a like the work the quantum work on the lattice like an interference from a multi-slit experiment. So when you have noise, it's in a way that you isn't it like that you destroy the coherence between the different slits, and at the end there's no like quantum interference between the different parts of the wave functions anymore, so that's why it gets stuck.
And why just in this low regime?
I would assume that this is like the noise basically destroys all the coherent evolution of the wave function as it moves from the central peak to the to what you see at this distribution outside.
Yeah.
That is fundamentally different from the Anderson localization, which I always think is a coherent effect.
It seems like your explanation would work for the middle case, the blue one, right, where you start seeing classical evolution, but not for the
for the peak.
Yeah, there's the localized one. Right, because if you're losing coherence, you're getting closer to something semi-classical.
It's intriguing.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'm a little confused. I mean, if your oscillate have extremely fast noise, then you would expect to just get an average J, and it should actually be the noiseless result. It's up to a certain time scale where the first correction takes place. So I would expect the blue initially would look like the black line up to a certain time scale. Do you know what this time scale is or how to estimate it?
Sorry, say it again, the question?
Because if it is oscillating extremely fast,
you expect
it should just be an average J. So it should correspond to the noiseless regime. And there should be some time scale like, so J over gamma.
Okay, this
is... Well, do we actually see that there are fluctuations happening? So have you tested it rather for very, very fast noise, it actually reduces to the noiseless regime?
So this was for a fluctuations rate that was 10 times the coupling energy, so maybe it was not enough. We can go to much larger, faster fluctuations to see what happens. I don't know, I can test it. Yes, because in principle, if the fluctuations are super, super fast, yes, the quantum system shouldn't see it. Okay, yeah.
Any more questions?
I always have 100, so just stop me if it's too many. So, okay, so...
Speak slowly.
No problem. Did you look at the shape of the solitonic, or, case where it's propagating around the lattice? You look at the shape of the wave function. Is it Gaussian shape or is it a different shape?
In the case where it's moving, it should. When you have a lot of spatial correlations, it should keep the Gaussian profile.
And did you try it through an actual overlapping rule? Because Sech and Gaussian look pretty similar to the eye. But if you try an overlap integral, you'll find there's a known difference, right?
Okay, I can look. For this one, we know it's Gaussian because we tested it. But for the moving wave packet, yes, I can check it. Yeah,
okay.
Actually, it's a
it's
good suggestion.
Check. Yeah, so if you're getting an effective soliton, it must be an effective nonlinearity. If you're not, that's even sort of more bizarre and interesting. So but I mean, both are interesting results. And then in your two particle case, I'm sorry, I maybe just missed it. What was was there any interaction between the two particles?
There was interaction, yes. I mean, there was just.
Can you show? I mean,
modeled.
I missed it. I apologize. Just for a quick clarification question.
So in the case of boson, we have on the
can you make same it
same site interaction, and it decays. Where is it? Okay. Is U-third if they are on the nearest neighbor sites for bosons. So it's just a model. I mean, we can put a more long-range interaction decaying with distance. So here is just on-site energy. I mean, two bosons on the same site, U, and we divide, I mean, it's one-third if they are nearest site, if they occupy nearest site. But I mean, it was just to try to see what happened. We can model more realistic interactions.
It seems to me like the most interesting question here, from my perspective, so you know, many body theorists would be to work with a hardcore model in which you
hardcore
have,
means that they can't
they cannot be on the same side, those on the spine, and near, you know, nearest neighbor, and then so that's integrable. So have nearest neighbor interactions and hopping, and then break that with next nearest neighbor and ask, as you go from the integrable to the chaotic regime, or the integrable to the non-integrable regime, let's call it, you know, what happens to your random walk properties?
Okay.
I think that's kind of an outstanding problem, and that's an area where, you know, right now you can get a lot of insight into the transition from integrable to chaotic behavior through, for example, entanglement spectrum statistics, which is pretty easy to calculate. And I'm not sure you need such a big lattice because a lot of your things stay localized. I think you'll know if it stays localized or not, and then you can use a smaller lattice, in which case you can actually think about doing this on just 28 sites or 25 sites and really actually do exact diagnostication of all the information. And then you don't need, per se, to put in, you know, to use tensor network methods because we don't really know how the entanglement's going to scale. It might be okay, it might not. But I think all those integral chaotic problems, and maybe people know differently, maybe Hans Bethe knows differently, for example, but I have to say, I don't think those problems have been well worked out in you know, open systems at all, of any kind, for quantum anybody regime. And so, you know, doing that even for classical noise would be a big step forward.
Okay. Ah, okay. Thank you.
That's very similar.
We can discuss about because
Am I missing something that's been done that maybe one of you knows about that I haven't seen it, but on this, you know, integral, we're trying to figure out many-body quantum chaos right now. There was just a meeting at Aspen on this. And I think there's a lot of, you know, forward progress, but it's also a bit stuck in the single particle perspective, you know, still is my thing personally.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to move to the many-particle cases.
Right. So being able to, you know, look at this problem and get past that whole, okay, I'm just going to do everything with Wigner Dyson where I've got a static Hamiltonian, like, I think that's a really, really fascinating problem. And you know, it gets also into quantum CAM theory, right? And what happens if you perturb away from, and your perturbation is something that's time dependent, right?
Yeah.
Interestingly, we know for nonlinear Schrodinger equation, you know, which is another one of these high dimensional, principal infinite dimensional problems, that if you perturb it with the dynamical terms, right, that there is a CAM theory established for that problem. A lot of many body physicists think that CAM theory is finite dimensional. Right, but there's you know, well-known cases in mathematical literature where it's infinite dimensional. So I think there's a very fundamental theory questions that you could address here. Right? So those are my
So let's discuss about this.
Sorry.
I think we need to conclude this session. And first, thank Claudia again.
Thank you.
And we should continue this discussion probably afterwards. I also have like lots of questions from an experimentalist standpoint, and that is, I think. I don't know, maybe we have a dedicated discussion session on some of the things in the afternoon.